Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Sports City. It's your boy TP Thomas back at the helm. Got the bed of the grill all ready, charcoal ready to get lit up. Welcome to the cookout. You already know what time it is, man. The call-in number is 929-477-2759. We got you for the next 60 to 90 minutes or so, depending on how crazy the flame could get here in the kitchen. Got a lot of stuff to go over, but we haven't been here since Sunday, so I do want to elaborate on how things went down as of Sunday afternoon and evening, because, oh boy, everything did get crazy. So, first and foremost, there was an interesting story that I had just seen, and I'm trying to wait to see the name. They said that the Jets had just got announced a new head coach. So I'm waiting to see the story come to me. But in the meanwhile, I will jump into the show as necessary. Rodri is still traveling through the USA, and the crazy part about Mr. Jones is I just got notification that he is on his way to New Orleans. He is going to be watching the game up against the Eagles, so he will be there pretty shortly. I just got the word on the situation. Adam Gase is now the head coach for the New York Jets. So that is what I was waiting for. I just seen breaking news, and I was waiting to see the name. I just got the name. So the Jets now have a new coach with Todd Bowles being shown the exit in this offseason. Okay, so without any further ado, I have along with the people called in, press one and let me know if you want to rock. I'll get you guys in here as best as I see fit. I am going to jump into the game. Like I said, the first game that I do have on slate was the Los Angeles Chargers up against the Baltimore Ravens, in which, I'm not going to lie, I got this one correct. I'm not going to lie, Felicity. I got this game correct, calling out the Chargers. I had to sing my song, Big Wheel Keep on Turning. And Rivers did what he needed to do, but also I have to tip my hat to the Chargers defense as well, by doing as much as they could to shut down Lamar Jackson for the first half and a good portion of the second half. And then it was like early in the fourth quarter is when Lamar Jackson finally woke up and started playing his brand of football and made this a game. I do have a caller in queue calling out of the 480 area code. There we go. We have Nacho in the building. Nacho, welcome to the cookout. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good.
Who let the dogs out? Let me stop.
The neighbors.
This is the hood version. So, I think me and you got this right, if I'm not mistaken. Picking.
No, I got it wrong.
Let me go back to the sheet. Did he pick this wrong? I think he might have went against the panel. Nacho is the only. No, him and Doc. And Doc will probably be around the brunch on Sunday, because this is when Doc comes around. He loves the show back from like 2010. And he comes around when it's playoff football in the kitchen. So you and Doc went Ravens, and the rest of the panel between me, Rodri, and Anthony, AR, all went Chargers. I don't even know where to go with this on how the Chargers started out hot, both sides of the ball. They just couldn't really score touchdowns. I know if they would have been scoring touchdowns, this game would have got out of hand. It was a field goal game basically early, and that's what kept it somewhat close. And you got to actually give a little credit to the Ravens defense for not giving up touchdowns, because the Chargers offense has actually been playing well this season. So your thoughts on this game, especially with you predicting wrong on this one, your thoughts with the Chargers advancing?
My thoughts on the Chargers are exactly what I thought offensively. They would be able to move the ball but not be able to score touchdowns. And keep it low scoring. Of course, they scored, 21 was it? Something like that. So they're 24 or something of that nature. So they were able to go up there and score and you know, do what they had to do what I thought they would do offensively against that defense. Conversely, I think this is a Ravens offensive blunder. Again, hindsight 2020, sitting here, you know, looking at Lamar Jackson, and then, of course, he finished with the two touchdowns there at the end, and it didn't look as bad statistically, but it was pretty effing horrible throughout the whole game for that man. I think the thing that we need to realize, and which was, I think, a little over-glossified, even though they've been talking about it over the past couple of days, is what San Diego was able to do on defense when they played those safeties down there at linebacker. They just did so much. They ran the dime pretty much all game, I believe it was, with those two safeties, kept it down there, and just they played the best defensive game plan I've seen someone play against the team in recent memory, just shutting it down for them from the get-go. There was no even chance for Lamar Jackson and that offense to catch any sense of rhythm from what they did. And let's not forget that once they started going into that vanilla defense and backing off and not playing what they were playing all game, after he was able to light them up and throw the ball and score and run the ball, and he got those two touchdowns. So, to me, again, I'm not a head coach, obviously, and I'm not even near an NFL team. But if I'm John Harbaugh and I'm sitting there and I'm looking at my offense being nothing, shut down, and I can't pass the ball, I'm putting in my Super Bowl MVP, who is clutch, who up until, you know, Nick Foles had one of the best playoff runs, and since he hadn't been able to make the playoffs since then, it still had been standing. And that guy was itching for a playoff. You know, I could see him grabbing that helmet there towards the end. So just it really upset me again. I understand, you know, Lamar's your guy and yada, 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 and this and that. But Joe Flacco's your $100 million Super Bowl MVP quarterback who didn't have an amazing defense like that and ran through that AFC division or conference and then went into the Super Bowl. And if it wasn't for a lights out New Orleans, he probably could have put up 40, maybe almost 50 points on that team, and we could have seen another thromping in the Super Bowl. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. So I just have to say that you have to give Joe Flacco the opportunity to try to come back. You were down late, very close late. I think it was two touchdowns with, what, 8 minutes left in the third quarter. You got a Joe Flacco in. You had done nothing offensively, running the ball, passing the ball. Nothing was working at all. You have to Joe Flacco it in and see what he can do. I think I don't know if he comes back and wins. I'm not going to say he leads the greatest comeback of all time, but you have to show this team that you want to win. And I'm not saying that leaving Lamar Jackson proves that you want to lose, but you were getting beat. Coaching-wise, you were getting beat up and down that field defensively by that defensive coordinator, and you did nothing at all offensively to change that. Again, defensively, the Ravens get all the standing ovations I think you could possibly give a defense who the opposing offense had, I think, what, two starting positions inside the 30, and then also had multiple starting positions inside the 50 that they have to contend with. You know, goal line stand after goal line stand that they did to give their offense chance, turnovers to give their offense chance, even there late. So, man, it's ridiculous. But, you know, it was a bad pick by me. I did not see the Chargers having the defensive plan that they did, and they shut them all down. So, bad pick by me, but a well-executed defensive plan by the Chargers and shut everything down. And I think New England should be pretty scared.
If he had another weapon in that receiving game, it would have been much different. Looking at what he had, I mean, his two touchdown passes went to Crabtree. Crabtree caught his only two catches as touchdown passes and being targeted four times within this game. Everybody else was basically a no-show all in all throughout the game. Mark Andrews is one of the rookies that I actually think is one of his best targets, being a tight end, but he has receiver speed to be his size. So this is to me, I think he's the next makeup of a Travis Kelce. You know, if you know his career holds up, he doesn't get injured, I think he could be that special to the offense. But if he had another strong presence in the receiving core. I mean, if I'm looking at the name that they have here, I mean, Willie Sneed is the next name that I look at as being a name that's a notable one. Outside of this, it's like Lamar has to make these plays on the ground and, you know, be the rock shooter for this team. I mean, literally, and this is going game by game. He's been leading this team in rushing. And, of course, I mean, naturally, he's the quarterback that he's going to throw the ball more to. But he has to do everything on the offensive side of the ball. If he had anybody to take some of the pressure off him, take some people out of the box, it would be much different. But they got shut out in the first half at home. So that says a lot about the production of this offense, you know, for the most part.
Go ahead.
Say what you're going to say.
No, I was going to say, I think that even if he had an elite weapon at wide receiver or if not there, an elite running back, the defensive plan that the Chargers had, I just think he was shut down. I think he would have been shut down with anyone. And what I mean by that is if we go back and you look at that first quarter and second quarter, there are guys running open. Now, they're not wide open. They're not 5 yards open, but they're open. If he's able to get a pass off, he probably hits about two or three, and we're talking a different game right now. He was unable to get the ball out. Now, it's not a knock on him. I'm not saying that any – this is not – I don't want to say anything bad about Lamar Jackson, but he has a certain skill set now, and the ceiling may be higher than I'll get out, but as of right now, it's not up there yet. So they had a game plan set for him, and when they put it in, they shut it down. And I think that even if he had an elite wide receiver or maybe an elite running back, that game plan with the skill that they have at defense and the Chargers at the cornerback and safety position and their linebackers, I think they still would have been able to shut him down. I just think that they just came with the right stuff that day. And I think any other day, even if we give him, like I said, give him an elite guy, I think they still match up just perfect enough to take him down. Now, maybe they got to make a couple adjustments. Maybe they go through and get some offensive line help and remedy that problem to help him out. But I think that it was just the Chargers, their plan, their players. It was just too much, and I think it would have been too much 9 times out of 10.
Okay. And I heard you say that the Patriots need to be concerned, and they should be, but it's not like they don't know who this team is. They've played them in years past, and you know Bill Belichick does his homework. So we'll see how this game goes. I'm not trying to, you know, call or predict the game right now. I know we got a ton of time before we get to Sunday, before we do the predictions, because that game is on Sunday afternoon as well. I will be trying to get some of the predictions on Saturday's games, though, unless, no, you know what, I'll save it for the corner. The corner on Saturday morning, we'll save that for the predictions for Saturday's game. In which this came down to a late possession. The Ravens could have got back in it. They got the ball back, started moving the ball as best as they could, and then Lamar got stripped, and the game was over. And I'm going to be honest, and I'm not that brutal toward Lamar Jackson because I'm enamored by him since he came out of college and coming into the pro ranks and doing what he was able to do with this offense and get them to a playoff bid and win the AFC North. Like they got there winning the division by being down to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I give him a lot of credit. But this is where I'm actually going to be somewhat critical. It was a careless mistake when he got stripped because the way that he was trying to wind up to throw the ball, I don't think he was paying attention to the pressure to get there. And they swatted at the ball and got the ball to get on the carpet. Well, not the carpet, but on the canvas or the grass, however you want to look at it. And they were able to pick it up and seal the game. But, I mean, he's a rookie. And he's only going to learn from this, learning from one of the league's best in its history in Phillip Rivers, too. And going up against a quality defense throughout his first season of the, you know, of his career, mm-hmm. going up against a quality Los Angeles Chargers defense as well. So, I mean, it's a learning experience, but definitely got to, you know, consider the clock. They were watching that clock time run out on him, and he wasn't valuing the ball. And that's something that a quarterback that I know all too well does a lot. He doesn't value the ball, and that's where those turnovers happen. So as time progresses, especially going into next season, I know that this is something that they'll try and tattoo in his brain is to make sure that they take care of the ball. Okay. Anything else before we do get away from this game with the Chargers and the Ravens?
No, nothing really. Again, just he's got to, like you said, he's got to get better. And if there's one thing I can critique the kid on, it's that RPO handoff. Once he gets that down, I think a lot of the problems will cease to exist. But he's very careless with that RPO handoff, whether he's keeping it or giving it away. And again, maybe that comes with more consistency at the position and more consistency at playing with a certain running back and not so much switching in and out. So we'll see what happens next year, but that'd be the only, not the only thing, but that'd be the big harp I'd have on him that he needs to corral down if they want to make some runs in the postseason next year or year after.
Yeah, and also looking at that, he also had those two fumbles as well. I was looking at his passing stats, but he had an interception that, you know, you could throw in there. So he had three turnovers too. And that's what I'm talking about, valuing the ball. That all comes into play too. But again, this is a young quarterback making it to the playoffs, going up against a team that's trying to do it with their quarterback and their tight end. I can't even just look at it just being the Rivers show, but, you know, with Rivers being the name that you think of first when you mention the Chargers, is the way I'm looking at the situation. But knowing that this defense was hungry to try and get this and get away from Baltimore, they have a point to prove. They're going to be on the road, you know, basically throughout the playoffs as well. So they know that they have an up-road hill, you know, to try and get through this situation. And depending on how the other game goes down to see if they where they may end up playing, whether it's going to be in Kansas City or in Indianapolis, is a whole other situation itself. But like I said,
no, it'd be in LA.
I can't say that again.
It'd be in LA because Indianapolis is the sixth seed. It'd be in LA. If they played Indianapolis, they play in LA.
No, Indianapolis or Kansas City, right?
They're playing, yeah, Indianapolis or Kansas City. So if they win, they're either going to play.
The Chargers
in
will get
LA
home field. Okay, they got the better record. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, if they
played
Indianapolis, they would get the home field at that point. Well, as much of a home field as, you know, 20 fans can give them.
Right. And that, too. So we have to see how they travel or, you know, handle the situation. But like I said, I want to see this Ravens team moving forward into next season. Hopefully they draft well. And the crazy part about this upcoming season is they are going to be without their general manager in Ozzie Newsome. This is Ozzie Newsome's last season as GM for the Ravens. So I want to see how they, you know, approach the draft and what positions they go after. And knowing that he was a former tight end, they always made sure that they had a quality tight end. And I can think back as far as Todd Heap up until this point right now with Mark Andrews. So wondering where these guys go, if they do go after a couple, you know, young receivers, if they get another running back there. I don't want to see Gus Edwards go because I know him personally. Gus the Bus is my guy, so I want to see him remain back there. But I do want to see how they do strengthen this offense because the defense is legit. And they're also going to have to try and look for somebody that can actually pick up as many pieces as possible behind Terrell Suggs. I mean, you got to think Chief Sizzle only has a few years left, too. He's been in the league for quite some time, too. That's a given that he's still healthy and able to give them a go defensively because he was a young pup while Ray Lewis and Ed Reed were around. Now he's the older guy. So they have to try and get somebody to, you know, fill his void or not even to fill his void. Let me not say it like that, but be ready when he's potentially ready to leave. Okay, so we are going to get into the wait, hold on. We do have a caller in queue calling from, well, I'm not even going to mention. Welcome to the cookout. How are you feeling this evening?
Fellas, what's happening, baby? It's good to be back. Decided to step into the kitchen tonight. Mr. Moe's hailing from the Windy City. Extra cold this week. We're giving out double boinks for free. Hope you're all well.
Okay, so from what you've heard so far, I mean, your thoughts, I mean, especially with the, I don't know if you heard at the beginning of the show, the Jets have a new coach in Adam Gase getting to New York. And also this is the first game that we started to mention between the Chargers and the Ravens. I mean, where would you like to elaborate before we get away from this game to start off?
I think that the Gase move is a good move. Obviously knew him well from his time here in Chicago. I thought he did a good job in Miami. I was kind of surprised when the news broke that they were moving on from him. I think, you know, he's somebody that, you know, Miami had a good year for the most part, a couple bad games, a couple bad breaks. Obviously, I think it's going to take more than him to turn around that organization. You know, they need to draft well. They need to figure out Tannehill's the guy for them for the future. But him going to the Jets, I think he's going to do extremely well. Obviously, he's going to have to live up to the pressure of the New York media, the New York market. But ultimately, if he can get Sam Darnold and that team turn around, I say within a two-year window, if they look like a competitive team, I think Gase, he's young, 40 years old. He's a good offensive-minded coach. You know, that division, let's call it what it is. Once Tom Brady moves on, who knows what Belichick's future is. You think he has more than 5 years left of coaching? There could be a shift in power in that division. And when you have somebody like Gase Young that could be taking over the Jets' reign, he could be steering them in the right direction. Obviously, he's going to have extra motivation to stay ahead of Miami, and he knows the division well with Buffalo and the Patriots, what he'll get. As far as the game is concerned from Sunday, the early game, you know, personally, going into it, I liked the Ravens, but as the game got closer and closer, my whole gut got turned around, and I had a feeling that the Chargers were going to show up and play well, and I'm happy they did. I'm looking forward to the matchup of Phillip Rivers versus Tom Brady. I think San Diego is still underestimated. They had a great season. They had a couple bad bounces during the end of the year, but a lot of that's contributed to Melvin Gordon going down, Keenan Allen being out for that game. I think that the Chargers are going to come ready to play versus New England. Fingers crossed that they could pull off something big. I'm excited, you know. I think it's going to be a heck of a weekend coming up. A lot of good football to watch.
Wow, this dude went at the grill. Huh? He is not playing. He is eating. He is eating. So, wait, let me ask the question, since you already are trying to burn the city down. So you think once Brady's done, Belichick will soon be leaving? You don't have confidence that Belichick will ride this out until he noticeably looks like he can't coach any longer?
I don't think he needs to. It's not a matter of, I think that there will be an end of the road for Belichick. I mean, eventually, how old does he want to coach till, right? I mean, do you see him coaching for more than 5 more years? I mean, personally, I think that he could step away. I think that the writing is on the wall that McDaniels is going to stay in New England. I think eventually Belichick is going to step away, at least from the day-to-day, the coaching. I could see him becoming a full-time executive in the front office with the Patriots. It's just there's going to come a point in time when, you know, he's going to realize, hey, what's the desire to continue to do this? I mean, as long as he continues to love the job and love the in-and-out grind of what it is to be an NFL coach, sure, I'm sure he will still have the skill level to pursue it. But if you're talking about him, the challenge of what he's going to have to accomplish, I mean, eventually, you know, when you become so good at a craft, you lose that desire because the overall challenge becomes a little more, you know, I guess you could say boring or tedious. And, you know, you start having a desire for new challenges and new obstacles that you want to face. And as a man gets older, I could definitely see him stepping away, giving McDaniels kind of the reins, and him ultimately falling back to either a full-time position with the front office with the Patriots, or he could do a part-time position where he's more of a consultant. But, yeah, I mean, if you were to say right now, give me prediction, I would say Brady has 2 years left, and Belichick probably is in, like, a 3 to 5 year window.
See, that's perfect. Wow. That's kind of what I put it at, and that's kind of about the same thing. And if I can get that, that would be amazing, because then we get to see Belichick take a Tom Brady, Tom Brady-less, you know, Patriots team to the AFC Championship game 2 more years after Brady's gone. And then that answers the question, and then he can go off and retire, and then we're all good and dandy, and then we can just realize that the greatest accomplished system quarterback ever lived, you know, is the first ballot Hall of Famer. But if that happens, that'll be great, and then we can all breathe easy and realize the greatness that is Mr. Bill Belichick.
Yeah, it's like the Phil Jackson dilemma of when he stepped away from basketball. It becomes the point of, like, when you have won everything, what else is there to win? And the only thing that could lead him back is something that was a challenge, which was the Knicks front office. We all know how that panned out. It was a huge, I don't want to say failure, but probably a bigger mistake than he realized getting into. And sometimes it's good just to step away, you know, enjoy your family, and enjoy the next, career point of wherever you want to go forward. And, yeah, Belichick, in my opinion, has already cemented himself as the greatest coach. He can definitely add a little more power to that by taking a team far without Tom Brady.
Wow. You guys, Mark, you actually say, you know, the challenge is gone, but wouldn't it be a challenge if Brady left? Like, everybody's saying, well, Brady, it's because of Brady, is, you know, a lot of people say it's the system, and it's kind of like, you know, the scale being weighed, and you know, the lady holding one side of the scale and holding the other. Is it Brady or is it Belichick? So if Brady says he wants to play until he's 45, I mean, this year he'll be 42. That means it's this year and another three behind it. And then, well, I doubt he plays the 45. He plays the 45.
There's a difference between wanting to and your body allowing you to. And that's also why I say five years for Belichick,
like,
two for Brady.
Does he look like he's slowing down? Does he look like he's slowing down?
Yes.
He was never
fast. He's the same Tom Brady.
If you look at his numbers, he's no longer a top five quarterback statistically. Right now, he's like in the mid, like in the teens. I think he's like 15 range, which, hey, for a 42-year-old quarterback is unheard of. I mean, we're talking about nobody else has the ability to do what he's doing. But, yes, he is slowing down, and the years coming forward, it's going to continue. I mean, you know, the old cliche, father time is undefeated, that's gonna happen. I mean, you know, the greatest at the end.
Hold on, Mark. We do got a caller in too. I want to get the caller in too. But listen, you said the numbers statistically aren't there, right? That's what you just said. He had a season with
Brock.
His
numbers are down.
Right. I hear you. This is a season where Gronk was injured again, and that's the biggest question that I look at with the Patriots. And I'm getting away from the whole show, but the cookout is flaming, so this is a whole other situation. Gronk injured again, then this is happening season by season, and you also have a season where Gordon stepped away from the team when they were smoking hot. The Patriots were smoking hot. Now, picture if he still had his feet on the outside, not dealing with his own personal ills or illnesses that he had to get by, but that offense was doing it. And you have to think, look at the receivers that are around him. It's not like he has studs on the outside. I really want to say his best receiver is Edelman. Edelman, to me, is his best target as of right now, and you can see in those games.
So,
he'll go to Edelman anywhere from 9 to 11 times a game.
So your argument for why he didn't perform this year is the same argument why he's a Hall of Famer and the greatest quarterback, because he didn't have those things when he was putting up those numbers. So now that he doesn't have those things and he's not putting up the numbers, it's because he doesn't have them. I'm just confused because I hear that a lot from you. When you talk about Tom Brady in those years, other than the Randy Moss year, he didn't have no receivers. He didn't have nobody. But he was putting up big numbers and he was putting up wins. But now he doesn't have anybody and people are injured again.
He's still putting up wins.
The numbers the team's putting up wins, yeah. But we have to understand the numbers aren't there, and that's what we're talking about. Is he slowing down as the quarterback? Yes, he's slowing down. Is that team with Bill Belichick slowing down? No, they're not. They're still in a divisional game with a home divisional game. So, no, that team is not slowing down. But him as a quarterback, yes, you can see his play is not up to par as we've seen in those MVP rival or MVP seasons.
And, you know, for Tom Brady standards, it's okay for him to go down. Decline is natural. But you're right. They're still a 12-win team. They still have the bye. You know, the key thing is that, you know, for him, even him at, you know, what would be considered a low point, he's still better than half of the league, if not more. And what he loses for and his physical ability – he still has mentally. The desire will become when he's 44 years old and maybe, you know, the instincts start slowing down, you know, if that starts to happen, it's going to be hard for a guy that good to continue to say, I want to get up every day and do this, you know. There was a point where, you know, look at Kobe walking away, look at Jordan walking away, look at all the greats of the game, Derek Jeter walking away. Eventually they realize, you know what, the time has come where mentally I'm not as sharp and physically I'm no longer sharp and I need to walk away. Tom Brady's been fortunate. He's been, you know, in a great organization. He's been pretty much, because of his ability to digest defenses and react so fast, he's been pretty much healthy for a good majority of his career. You know, at the later stage, if stuff starts to affect him, how will his recovery be? You know, I still think they're going to have a chance in this playoffs because, they're there. They're at home field advantage. They have Belichick. But, you know, in the years that we're talking about, 43, 44, as he's getting older, you know, it's the desire is going to be hard when you have done everything and you've already cemented your name as the greatest of all time to continue to want to prove it day in and day out.
This is interesting because I'm looking at his numbers for this season, right? Let's go over the numbers, right? Statistically, he's averaging over 4,000 yards passing, which he has. He has over 65% completion percentage, 29 touchdowns thrown to 11 picks. He damn near was close to single digits, even though he was two away from that. Now, his winning percentage is still there. He finished 11-5. I don't even want to just look at first in the AFC East. I mean, they're going to dominate the AFC East until he noticeably looks like he's falling away from the game. That's how I feel. I mean, he still knows what to do to the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Jets to get those guys out of the way. They may split one or two of those series, but that's still at least four wins right there for them. So his best receiver this season was a running back. James White ended up leading his team in receiving, well, receptions, but Julian Edelman led the team in receiving yards with 850. You also look at the production out of guys like Gronkowski, who missed three games this season. He only had 47 receptions this year in a subpar season with 682 receiving yards and three touchdowns. That's not a Gronkowski season. I look at the guys that weren't there for him. 11 games played out of Josh Gordon. They get him midseason. Edelman missed four games this season, too, due to the suspension also. So you got to think about what he was able to do with the batch that he had right here. I don't see like this is a major drop-off, but let me get the caller in. It is cooking in this cookout. Calling in from the 317, welcome to the cookout. How are you feeling?
I'm doing all right. How's everybody doing this evening?
It's hot in here. It's a little hot in here. So it went from the AFC playoff game to the next matchup, and you know that once that Patriots starts going, it gets hot in here. So your thoughts on the game, if you want, and also how do you feel about the situation in New England? Do you think Belichick leaves when Brady leaves? Do you think he has the gall to keep going? How long do you think Brady goes as well, too?
Well, Belichick and Brady are going to be leaving at the same time within, I give them about a year to two. They're going to be gone. And Brady's Brady, but I heard somebody earlier that said Father Time is undefeated. It's going to start kicking in, and then what the Patriots are going to have to do is they're going to have to start remaking that roster.
So I'm going to actually start calling him Donald because he's the only one that's been able to fight this clock better than anybody at the quarterback position. I can think of, like, Craig or DeBerg, like Steve DeBerg. Those are the only guys I can think of at the quarterback position that played this long. Once you've seen Peyton Manning get to, like, 37, 38, he looked terrible. You've seen Brett Favre getting to 40. He got knocked out while he was in Minnesota. Like, Warren Moon left the game like that, too. So it's like you don't really see quarterbacks get that up in age. Brady's still on top of a division and threatening to be in his 12th or 11th championship game if he beats the Chargers. Like, that still is a threat.
Well, and also, I mean, you got to give it to their offensive coaches because the Patriots, they don't really throw the ball deep. They don't need that much time to throw the ball deep. It's dink and dive and just matriculate the ball down the field. I mean, that's basically what's kept Brady going as long as he's been going. I mean, he doesn't get hit that much. So, I mean, you gotta give, you know, even though we don't really discuss that offensive coordinator over there in New England. I don't even know what his name is anymore. We don't care about him over here in Indianapolis.
McDaniel.
No. We don't discuss his name. You know, I mean, he's irrelevant.
Oh, I forgot. He turns you guys down. I apologize. I'm sorry.
Yeah. McShady over there. So, I mean, you got to give them credit because all they do is literally dink and dive. They don't really throw the ball deep. Now, they don't have any true deep threats anyway, as it is. But, I mean, they pretty much have kept Brady as healthy as can be. So, I mean, you got to give them credit.
Okay, and your thoughts on the game? And me, you, and Rodri picked this right, going with the Chargers on this matchup.
Oh, yes, by far. I think the Chargers are going to go in there and actually handle business.
I was talking about the Ravens-Chargers matchup. I'll wait till Sunday to really get the real prediction from you, but you're already giving the Chargers the leg up.
I think the Chargers do have a big opportunity to go in there and knock them off, and the reason why I say that is because the Patriots literally limped into the playoffs. I mean, they barely beat the Jets. They barely beat the Bills. They had a rough time against them. I mean, they're literally limping in here, and Gronkowski, I mean, nobody knows how long he's going to last in a game nowadays because he can't stay on the field. So I honestly think with the way that the Chargers are playing, I think they have a better chance of actually getting them. And Melvin Gordon's coming back this week too, so you're going to be getting another force that can actually relieve stress off of Phillip Rivers, so he's not doing anything dumb with the football.
I think Melvin Gordon did play in that last game. He did play in the game up against the Ravens too, so he didn't
play like his normal self. So, I mean, because he came back off of that injury, so now with him getting the game underneath him, he's a little bit better. You know, when you get hit and then you go to not being able to get hit no more, you know, your body has to get back up to that again. So I think he's going to come out with a vengeance in his eyes and actually show what he's made of this playoffs.
Okay, fair enough.
Hey, I know you're trying to save this game for this weekend, but I tell you what, I agree. Of all the dogs this weekend, by far I think the Chargers have the best chance to pull off an upset.
Whoa, it is hot in this kitchen. Okay. So we have two. I'm not writing it down, but I will remember. I will remember how this went down on the cookout that I already have A-Rod and Moe coming back into the kitchen, both saying Chargers. Well, same potential. I won't throw it on the grill just yet. I'll say they have the potential.
But you can put it down for me. I'll be traveling this weekend, so you can write it down, put whatever you start by my name. I'd say Chargers, and I love Chargers -4. So I would take them on the money line to win straight up.
How do you feel about that the line right there too, A-Rob? You think that they'll cover? So the Chargers are favored? They're favored in New England?
No, they're -4.
Oh, the dog. Oh, no, they're +4. They're +4.
Yeah, New England's -4.
Oh, New England's -4. Okay, yeah. So, hey, Rob, how do you feel about the line right there? Do you think New England will cover they have to get a touchdown to cover?
It's going to be a closer game than that. I don't think they'll do that. I think it's going to be a 3-point game with the Chargers probably more than likely taking the game.
So that means they'll cover. You think that they'll cover the game too?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Good enough. I've already got Moles written down right now for Chargers right now too. Hey, Rob, I'll let you dwindle on it. I'll let you – you have a couple of days to, you know, change your mind if you'd like. Okay. So – we'll get to the next game, right? In Sports City, I'm feeling some type of way because I got Moe's back in the kitchen. So it's like I got to kind of reserve my brother as best as I possibly can. But to me, and a lot of these, I can say majority of them, all of the games this weekend were great. Like, they have that hold-your-breath atmosphere to them, you know, like, what's going to happen next? You know what I'm saying? And in this game right here, with the defending champion Philadelphia Eagles going into Soldier Field up against one of the league's, I'm not even saying NFC, one of the league's hottest football teams, go in there, and I don't know whether to say, you know, just God being with them or the wind off of the lake. I don't know what I can say, but it benefited them at the end of the game to help them, you know, hang on by two dinks, if you will, to win this game in Soldier 16-15. So I want to see how you guys feel about A-Rod. A-Rod, I'm going to come to you first. Now, I want you to speak about the game, right? And I'm going to get real technical, and it's going to get real hot in the kitchen. I want to see how you guys feel about the situation. I've been talking to a lot of people about the situation. I'm not even going to say scenario. The situation that Philadelphia Eagles have right now, with the way that Nick Foles has been playing in the past season and this season right here, I wanted to say season and a half, but they just finished a full season. So, but that last season and this season, and for him to win a Super Bowl up against Tom Brady and those Patriots, and for him to go in the Soldier and get this game up against the Bears, any more success for him is a plus. Do they stay with him, or do they go back to Wentz and watch another team entice them to get Nick Foles? But I'll let you speak on the game as well. Hey, Rob, I'll let you go first.
Well, I think it's going to be a much more competitive game than their first opportunity, Adam, where it was, I believe, 41-7. I think with Nick Foles, the Eagles seem like a different team. And the reason why I say that is because it's like he's not running for his life as much. They control the football more. And it's kind of different because it's like the offensive coordinator is actually working with Nick Foles more than with Wentz. With Wentz, they expect Wentz to get the ball away and actually, you know, have his own little magic. So it's by far going to be interesting to see what the Eagles do, no matter what happens in the playoffs, with Nick Foles this offseason, because he is a free agent. So it's going to be interesting because Carson Wentz has shown that he cannot stay healthy. Within the last two seasons, he's only played 10 games. So it's going to be really interesting. But with Philly going into New Orleans, that's going to be it's going to be one of the better games right there, I think, honestly.
So before I go to Mark, who do you think they stay with? Do they stay with Foles or do they stay with Wentz?
Well, see, and that's the thing. It's going to depend on their cap space because I got to look and see exactly how much cap space they have right now. But Nick Foles is going to want big quarterback money. So the real thing is if you got enough money for that. If you don't, you're going to have to let him go because Carson Wentz's contract is going to be coming up here soon. They're going to have to redo his contract because he's still on a rookie deal. So I think they're still going to stick with Carson Wentz because younger quarterback, less money as of right now, and he is your franchise quarterback.
Okay, and any thoughts toward the game as well before I go to Mark also?
I think it's really going to come down to
No, I'm talking about the game that went past, not the future game. I'm talking about the Bears and the Eagle game.
Oh, the Bears and Eagles? Well,
yeah.
The kick was blocked. So, I mean, everybody has to give Cody Parkey a little breather. But still, I think the Bears had numerous opportunities to win that game. You had fourth down and three on the goal line, and they complete a short out pass for a touchdown. You can't allow that on fourth and three. You have to defend that better than that. So if the Bears want to be mad at anybody, they need to be mad at themselves because they actually had an opportunity to win that game. the Eagles just came in and I won't necessarily say bullied the Bears, but they played well enough to get a win because the Bears should have won the game.
Okay, so I have a resident Colts fan in the building, and I have a resident diehard Bears fan in the building. Mark, I don't even know where to start or where to begin. I'll let you have your way with it on what you've heard so far. I mean, all of the drama that went into the Cody Parkey kick. And I know I got a couple of people that I know that were posting his Instagram because I'm not on Instagram, and they were showing him perfect to hit a pole. He was kicking the ball and hitting the pole on purpose. So it was just so fitting that that situation happened to him, and he missed kicks throughout the season. And I don't want to put this whole game on Cody missing the kick, but in a critical situation with them trying to ice the kicker, it ended up working. I mean, even though it looks like the ball was touched, so on and so forth. But, I mean, your thoughts on this game, and especially me being within the division, which you know that we have a rivalry, but on a great effort for the Bears within this season of them getting Khalil Mack and him basically changing the whole atmosphere in the Windy City.
Yeah, I've already cried every tear I'm gonna, drank every drop of whiskey I'm gonna, and I've sobered up and gained some perspective back on it. You know, it was a good game. He's absolutely right. The Bears had multiple chances to close it out. It was a heavyweight playoff game. It's what you expect out of these games. It's what makes it so intense. You know, it's one and done. There is no tomorrow. Every game is like a game seven. Both these teams came to play to win. You know, it just so happened that when the time ended, the Bears missed a huge kick that allowed the Eagles to advance. The Bears did a lot of things great this year. This was a team that didn't have most people didn't buy that they would even win more than five or six games. Obviously, the Khalil Mack trade changed the landscape of their season. But, you know, I was overall impressed with what came about this season and what came about that game. You know, a lot of people have definitely thrown Cody Parker under the bus. But a lot of his teammates and coaches and those within the organization have picked him up, have said, like, you know, we still believe in you. You're our guy. We can't wait for you to come back next year. And, you know, in that same moment, lift us up to victory. And that's a good sentiment that you get from defeat. You know, a lot of times, you know, you have it's hard to accept any type of positive in defeat, especially something heartbreaking as that. But Hakeem Hicks said it, you know, one play in this game was not the ultimate thing. The Bears ultimately should have won the game, but they didn't. It was a collective of plays that were left on the field, that fourth and three, the obvious missed field goal. You know, you can go back to that first half. I mean, it was the first half where the Bears typically this season have come out, especially in big games, and been able to put points on the board. And the Eagles in that first half were able to keep them in check. I mean, it was a 3-3 game. It seemed like anybody's battle at that moment. And not to say you could sense a little bit of nervousness coming from Soldier Field, but you could definitely tell that this was not going to be what we've seen in other marquee matchups from the Bears earlier in the year, like against Minnesota, against the Rams, against even New England, which was a high-scoring game. You knew this was going to take all 60 minutes, and it was going to come down to some crucial plays. Tip your hats to Philly. That's why they're previous champs. Nick Foles has done an amazing job for them. You know, even when he made some critical turnovers in this game, he's still able to stay poised and playing against the best defense that he's faced this year. He made big plays when he needed to. And, you know, tip your hat to him. As far as moving forward with him, this is not his team. This is going to be his last run with them. I understand and know Philly very well, and I understand that you will get people saying, you know, bring Nick Foles back. They're fully invested in Carson Wentz. Foles is going to want starter money. And I don't think he's going to give them the kind of home team discount, which he's already done in the last couple of years. I think he's going to probably go out and seek a 3 to 5 year deal. They'll probably get somewhere close to 15 to 20 million. Somebody's going to overpay for him. And I don't see Philly. I see them thanking him for what he's done, but realizing what they have in Carson Wentz. Is Foles a better fit? Yeah, at times he is. But that also be, you know, where Foles is in his career. He has a great job of staying poised, getting the ball out fast. And he also realizes, like, you know, he's not trying to make something out of nothing. If it's not there, it's pretty much that's it. Get it out. Get it, you know, get on to the next play. Carson Wentz, still a young quarterback. You know, sometimes the younger guys, they want to extend plays. They think they could do something, make something out of nothing sometimes, and that could ultimately force mistakes or injuries, like what happened to him 2 years ago when he scrambled and got injured at that goal line. You know, he's trying to create a play, and ultimately backfires as far as his health is concerned. What was the third part of it? Bears last week, Foles, and you already asked about next week or not yet?
Wait, say that again?
So I touched on Bears, Eagles, Nick Foles, and what's the third part about the Eagles Saints next weekend?
Well, I didn't jump into that yet. I didn't get into that. I just wanted to see how you felt about everything about the game, you know, so on and so forth. And the crazy part about it, you touched on it. So I'm gonna ask you this. You say the younger quarterback and, you know, things of that nature, but you say Nick Foles gets the ball out and he, you know, he's been worthy and shown himself, then why not stay with him when Carson Wentz has had critical injuries in the past two seasons, and one where a torn ACL. And let's keep it real, throughout this season, while that ACL was trying to gain comfort through it, he still was ginger on it, right? And then he breaks a bone in his back. Like, he needs his leg. I think that's what makes him dangerous, is that he can take off and he's a mobile quarterback and can throw on a run. But also in his back, what if the blind side hit comes and hits him in his back? And not to say that I want to see something catastrophic happen or anything like that, but he could have a hit that could end up jeopardizing this situation again. Meanwhile, Nick Foles has gained the confidence of his team, been through dangerous situations of not only beating a New England Patriots team in which Belichick gets them ready for their best option or best weapon and was able to, you know, win that game successfully, but also able to go on to Chicago and beat one of the top three defenses in the NFL in the Chicago Bears and dealing with their pressure and coming up with a big play on fourth down to get Golden take the ball.
I mean, Carson Wentz before last year was probably in the lead to be the MVP. And at his age and what you have invested in him and what the belief is for what his longevity and what he projects to be over his career, you know, you don't turn your back away from him.
Yes, ultimately, what they want to have, both these quarterbacks on their roster, yes, they did it this year. Are they going to be able to pay two quarterbacks the amount of money that these guys are going to want and deserve? No. I mean, this isn't baseball. They're going to have to go up against the cap. And you can't pay, let's say Foles wants a 3 to 5 year deal, and then Carson Wentz is going to be up for an extension in 2 years. I mean, you can't have an overlapping of $50 million going to one position, $40 million. It's not going to happen. That's why teams who end up having, look at what New England did. I mean, New England, I mean, they traded Jimmy Garoppolo, I mean, which, you know, on the verge of Tom Brady being a 40-year-old quarterback is almost, you know, some people would think it's crazy because Garoppolo looked like the quarterback of the future, but yet they just couldn't, it's not a feasible thing to have that much of a cap hit at one single position. The two players. I mean, to choose up your roster, I mean, you're losing talent at other positions if you do that. You know, the only thing that maybe, and I don't even think this is realistic, is that you would try to, you know, maybe franchise Foles to just
trade him or offer him a lesser tender to trade him. But if Foles, and I'm also saying this with the impact that I don't believe the Eagles are going to win the Super Bowl. I think the Eagles season ends this week. I would have said that even, regardless, I thought New Orleans was going to be a favorite to win this weekend, whoever they played, whether it be Dallas or them. And I'm going there with the expectation that, yes, Foles beat the Bears, but, ultimately the magic carpet that he rode last year to a Super Bowl title is not going to happen this year. So going forward, to have a guy that is a backup making $15 million doesn't make sense. Now, I'll eat my words. If he runs through the NFC and wins the title, then all bets are off. But, I don't think that's going
to
happen.
If he gets to the Super Bowl, okay. So if he gets to the Super Bowl, what happens?
If they win a back-to-back Super Bowl, that changes the landscape of everything, but it's not going to happen.
If he gets it, do they stay with him or do they go back to Carson?
Carson wants.
Wow, he's stuck on his
If you're talking about, if you're talking about for a long-term projection, you have to go with the guy that's 25, 26 years old. Could they at least franchise – the thing is, how do you let Rocky walk away, right? I mean, you got to at least attempt everything you can to bring him back. They that's what they were able to do this year, where they extended him a, contract for the, they honored the I think it was a team option for this year, and they took that team option up, which I think he'd make them like $12 million a year. But that number's going to continue to get higher, and it's just – you can't pay a backup $15 to $20 million. It's not realistic. And Carson Wentz is too young. He's too talented. Even with the injuries, you've invested too much into him. It doesn't make sense to go away from the young, quarterback that you've invested in to ride the Nick Foles feel good story.
I don't know. Hey, Rob, before I get away from this, how do you feel about it? Do you think if Nick Foles runs the table again, do they stick with him or what?
No. If they do, they'll give him a franchise tag. That's it. He won't be there after this year.
Let me get away from it. But I think one of the more happiest people in this game in its entirety had to be Alshon Jeffrey, by far. To go back to the stadium, the team, the organization that brought him into the league and had so much belief in him and got rid of him. He won a Super Bowl. The Bears got hot. They end up matching up, and almost every time Alshon got the ball, he was making sure that he let the crowd know that it was him. And it just had that aura to the game, and I liked every last bit of that. And knowing how it really – and it's really starting to come down to the fourth quarter and a lot of these playoff matchups and being left into the hands of the kicker. At first sight, I thought that, Cody missed the kick, plain as day. But, you look at the replays and they're showing that it may have been touched or clipped. So, that comes into play too. But all in all, I was jumping all over them. I'm like, there's no way that this can happen to the Bears. Once again, and leaving it into the hands of the kicker. But it's a sad situation that it happened. And I don't know how to measure it because my guy is on the line with us, and he's a Bears fan and wanted him to be successful. But then on the other side of the spectrum, I mean, I'm a diehard Lions fan here in our division, and Golden Tate got sent to the Eagles, and I did not want to see him go. I did not want to see that happen. But Bob Quinn thought it was better for him to leave, and now look at Golden being successful in Philly, and look at Eric Ebron being successful in Indianapolis, and it just makes me scratch my head. And just hearing Michelle Tafoya go to him and ask him, well, how do you feel about this since Detroit let you go? I'm like, why? Like it is the first week of the playoffs, and Detroit has to be in the conversation again. It just I could have turned red, and I'm dark-skinned, so I don't even know how I'm going to turn red, but I just felt some type of way.
We definitely do appreciate you giving away Ebron.
Don't start with me. And the worst part about it with Eric Ebron, right? Every time he gets a chance to get a response from a reporter or something, he's like, "Well, Andrew Luck is the best quarterback I've ever had, and I always want to be, you know, part of the Colts, or he could always be my quarterback. And I'm like, wait, is Stafford really that bad? like, is he really that bad that you get to tear him up like this? And I say this all the time, everybody that knows me, people know me. Like, and they talk to me outside of the kitchen, they know how bad I get on Stafford. Like, I'm all over Stafford's case. So it's like, when I hear this, it's like, I look at him like, am I right or am I wrong? And then they still be like, don't worry about it, Stafford's going to be, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear it. So, and you hear it from people that come out of that locker room. I'm gonna throw it real here in the kitchen. I think Stafford and the way he's been productive in his career probably led to Calvin Johnson making that ultimate decision. Okay. So we have a little under 30 left, and this is probably going to carry into the end of the show, and that is the national championship. Now, I'm going to go first because I've been letting these guys cook at this grill, and these guys have been cooking all day. The city in the valley, a.k.a. the desert, a.k.a. the bottom tip of Nevada, you are one dirty little city. Setting the spread, I think it was 6.5 on this game in favor of Alabama. You know, everybody and their mother went with the favorite because Alabama's been running the table for oh so long. But it's like Clemson took every single bit of this season personal, not just up until the point to get to the national championship, but for them running the table, knocking off everybody by over, you know, 30-some-odd points a game, and watching the starter go from Kelly Bryant, they bench him for the true freshman in Trevor Lawrence. Detroit, I hope y'all tank the next two seasons because I want Trevor Lawrence to be the quarterback, period. He's tall. He can run if he needs to. He makes all of the throws. He's not one of those nonsense type of players. He's heady. And is able to do it with this roster. Now I want to see how they look next season. If he keeps this up next season, he should have been a part of the conversation for the Heisman. This season, they didn't even invite him to New York City. So that's a whole other situation on something that he probably took personal. And knowing that Dexter Lawrence, one of their strong defensive players, did not play, would have put a lot of damper on the situation if Clemson did lose. And it more or less became bulletin board material for them to go out there and not just win the game, or impressive fashion, they blew Alabama out. I can't even think of the last time that there was a game where Alabama gave up over 35 points being, you know, 5 touchdowns. They scored 40 on them, 40-plus on them. And it looked like they took their foot off the gas pedal to be nice. And Dabo Swinney, like, looking at his career moving forward, there was an interesting number that they threw out. He's still under the age of 50. Dabo's under 50, so let's just say Dabo coaches for another 12 years. How many national championships does Dabo bump into? Does he bump into another 2? Like, to be fair, let's say a championship every 6? Like, can that happen? Does he get another one while Trevor Lawrence is there? This is very interesting, especially they were beating Alabama at all phases of the game, running the ball down their throat, throwing, making incredible passes, and watching these guys making plays downfield with Ross and company, I don't know where to hit on this situation, but I will throw this one around the kitchen, see how you guys feel. Mark, I'll start with you. Your thoughts on the national championship and Clemson bringing it back to the ACC once again.
Yeah, Clemson came to play, man. That was a dominating showing in a championship game. You don't see it against Alabama ever, so that it happened against them, it's even more jaw-dropping. You know, sometimes teams rise to the occasion, and Clemson give them all the credit in the world. They rose up. They played a heck of a game. They won, and 15-0 is quite an accomplishment. Trevor Lawrence, yeah, you're right. This kid's gonna be, as long as he has a healthy and productive season next year, you can't imagine him being outside of the top 3. When that draft board comes around. Let's hope that the Lions are nowhere near that and we don't have to see them in our division for the next 10 years. I tell you what, though, they got something special going on in Clemson and Alabama, they're going to be fine. You know, they're going to rebound. And it even shows you, you know, everybody jumps on Notre Dame for their I guess you could say lack of performance against Clemson.
Now it doesn't look as bad when you compare it to what happened in the national championship game. And, I think the national championship game was, won by the right team. I still think, not to totally turn the topic, but I think the NCAA still has to figure out at least the placement of these games. I think they need to build up better momentum for the national championship game, having the Final Four before the New Year and then your New Year's Day bowl games. They're not correctly placed, and hopefully going forward they'll get it all figured out. I don't think I'm on the bandwagon for 8 teams in a playoff. I think 4 is fine. I just think the placement of the games need to be better. And ultimately, Monday night was a good showing, except for the actual production on the field, in which Clemson just smacked Alabama. So I guess if you're not an Alabama fan, everybody loved it because, let's be honest, Alabama's just been crushing college football for the last 10 years. So to finally see somebody kind of put them in their place, it felt like a victory for all of us, even if it's the smallest dose. And salute Clemson, man. They showed out. And from that pick six that got the game started, they just ran with it and never looked back.
Why? Before I go to A-Rob, why are you against the 8-team playoff?
I mean, I would be okay with it. It's just, I think they have to make a better system on how they schedule and line up these games. Like, for instance, right, I'm just going to throw this out there. I was, the Final Four game, the semifinals, right, Notre Dame versus Clemson, and the Alabama versus Oklahoma game, loved them. Was into them. But, like, on January 1st, I had little to no desire to watch bowls after those games, because those bowl games don't mean anything. And then there is a, 10-day layoff until the national championship. We also have a point in the scheduling where from the early part of December till the end of December, there's no football being played except for small bowl games between teams that, unless you follow those teams directly, aren't going to attract the audience that they should. So if you want to do an 18 playoff, fine. But it needs to be, this needs to be kind of like how the NFL builds up to the Super Bowl. They have to make a better build up. They have to schedule it. This is obviously going to be a 3-week playoff. And all the other bowl games need to be scheduled before or scattered throughout. But to place any games in between the semifinals and the finals, you lose your luster for the build-up for the finals, and it diminishes the audience for the bowl games that are not in the Final Four and the Final Four games because of the draw. Like, the Final Four games should have been on January 1st, point blank, or January 2nd, whatever day they want to do it, and then lead to a national championship game. It's just the scheduling is confusing. It's not as, desirable as what the NFL does by giving us 3 great weeks of championship level football that lead up to a Super Bowl. You see what I mean? They give us a great wild card. They give us a great divisional round and then the championship round. We get 3 consecutive weeks of just high energy playoff football that we all love that ultimately builds us up to a 2-week layoff for the main event, which is the Super Bowl. College football hasn't figured out the scheduling properly so that they can get, what they're doing is they're trying to maximize ratings, but what they're doing is kind of twisting and turning who plays when, and it's almost like they're serving your entree, right? They're bringing you out your steak. Here's your Final Four. Oh, sorry, we forgot. Here's your appetizer. No. I want the appetizer first, then bring me my steak, and then we'll finish it off with dessert to end it off. But I think they'll get it there. I think a lot of people in the media, sports talk radio, people have expressed their displeasure with the placement of it, and I think they'll use some of that time, I would say, between, December 15th to the end of the year to either one if you're going to expand to eight, or use some of these smaller bowl games that are still important, kind of showcase that. I want UCF to be showcased if they're not going to be in the top eight by putting them at their own primetime feature game or week that we lost by it all being bundled in on the same day with all these other games.
Okay, A-Rod, man, you picked this one correctly, so at least I did somewhat better. Rodri batted a complete 1,000 from Saturday's games in the playoffs up until Sunday and the national championship. He did not lose all weekend. But your thoughts on this game, the production of the Clemson Tigers, I mean, your thoughts on Trevor Lawrence, I think they're actually coming up with a new ruling that they're trying to make quarterbacks in the college ranks be able to stay in college until their junior year. So I think they're trying to put a fence around him before the NFL starts breaking down walls, forget a door, to get to him. And your thoughts on Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide and the Tide falling short in the national championship?
Well, Alabama has this saying, roll, Tide, roll. Mm-hmm. Roll Tide got rolled at the national championship.
What?
I mean, it was a complete annihilation. And there's some key points in the game that actually showed you what was going on. First off, the pick six. Tuiluga has been spotlighting his receivers and basically staring them down all season long. But he's so good to where he can actually, put it on a dime and actually get it there. So you could clearly see that Clemson was picking up on that with the very first couple plays of the game, where they literally just ran a trap play where the corner will roll back up, lay up off of him, play the flats instead of going out into the actual – go further out into the zone and actually have a linebacker underneath that and they have a safety over the top. So they definitely – they weren't going to allow anybody to go over the top because they know how good his arm is. So they rolled it up, rolled him down, pick six. And he's literally sitting there the whole time. So you got to put it into perspective. Like, first, Tuiluga has to stop staring down his wide receivers. Secondly, Clemson came out with a masterful game plan on both offense and defense. Now, the offense was very sluggish, I will say that, but they end up pouring it on late. Now, it also didn't help that, the Alabama corner number two got hurt on Justin's long touchdown run. Oh, and then we also mentioned that he got away from Nick Saban. He's from Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a freshman, a true freshman. And he was torching them. I think he had over 150 yards receiving. No receiver has ever had over 150 yards receiving on Nick Saban. No receiver. A freshman quarterback has never beaten Nick Saban. So you get a freshman wide receiver, you get a freshman quarterback completely go and throttle the mighty Roll Tide. It was great watching it. I had fun enjoying watching it. Now, I know, yes, I'm a Notre Dame fan, and everybody was like, well, Notre Dame got beat by Clemson. We did, and we could have had more points on the board, but we were playing very conservative. But the thing is, Nick Saban and Alabama got rolled, and Alabama got humbled because you could tell by the body language of Nick Saban. When Nick Saban's losing, he's very vocal and very – demonstrative with his body language. This game against Clemson, it just seemed like he was just shell-shocked, like he didn't know what to do. Like he panicked. That's a perfect word to say. He panicked. I mean, you're in field goal range to actually get more points on the board, and you go for a fake field goal, and the defense is basically in a base defense waiting for you to fake it. Come on, man.
Not even to cut you off, but not even that. It was fourth and six. They tried to run up the middle with the backup quarterback. Like, wait, you mean to tell me that was the game plan, that he's going to get 6 yards? He's going to get 6 yards
right
up the middle? Like that? That doesn't, like, your antenna doesn't raise, like your eyebrows don't raise, like that. That's been the more craziest play I've ever seen. And then just watching them put the camera on Nick Saban, and Nick Saban look at the special teams coach like, what's going on? Like, you let him get away with calling that fake? Like, get out of here. Like, okay, proceed.
Right.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but that really, that burned me. Like seriously, that's what you came up with? Like, no type
exactly
of...
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. It's like the whole entire Alabama staff panicked. Like, they panicked when they still had a chance in the game. Like, the game was still, you know, still close enough to where all they had to do was put some more points on the board, get a couple stops, which they weren't stopping ETN. They were not stopping the freshman Justin. They were not stopping Trevor. So if they could have got a stop or two, they still have a chance to get in the game. But they panicked and just allowed the game to balloon more and more to 44-16, and they didn't even score in the second half. Like, that stings. And Clemson is going to be dominant for many years to come.
At least for the next two. If Trevor, and this is the crazy part, he's a true freshman. If he gets better, what? Like, are you serious? If this gets better, like, that's incredible. Like, and looking at, they were showing it during the game, his stat line while he was in high school. From his freshman year to his senior year in high school, he was starting. Like, he's been playing like this since, and he's so poised. Like, it's like, I don't want to see him get better. Like, unless he's coming to Honolulu Blue in Michigan, and then fine. Do what you got to do in college, and staff will go gather your things. Like, well, other than that, it's like, man, this guy's phenomenal, and they can keep the pieces around him. I don't know. Alabama's going to have a lot of questions to answer, especially moving forward, and with them losing Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is asking to transfer. He's trying to transfer out of Alabama. I thought that he was a senior. Well, he is a senior, but I think he's potentially got another year of eligibility. So he's going to be trying to go to another school. He already has 2 national championships. I don't know why you would try to leave that, but that's a whole other scenario. Okay.
Well,
so
why
you want
to leave that is because, I mean, Tuluga's there, and then Tuluga's brother's coming right behind him.
Oh, okay.
You're not going to get no PC over there.
Listen, I can sit here and try and get a third national championship here. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that?
Well,
like
he got
the championship off of his back there, though. He won one off of his back there. So, and he had a point to deal with the last half of the championship as well, too.
He did, but you also got to remember, you know, a lot of the pro scouts, they don't look at the backup quarterback too much. He's thinking about his future here.
Fair enough. I don't know. Is there something about me trying to see him remain here and leave as a Crimson Tide player or alum? I wouldn't want to see him go elsewhere and get it done. But, I mean, to each his own, and if he feel like he could go somewhere else and be successful, that's on him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, like the Georgia freshman quarterback that just transferred to Ohio State. He's not going to sit there behind the starter for 3 years until he can play. A lot of kids, you know, that are ranked high, they want to play now.
That is true. I mean, listen, you got to understand the storm behind Tua. Tua, to me, should have won the Heisman or I mean, Kyler Murray, I don't take anything away from him. What he's able to do with Oklahoma, that was great in itself. But if Tua was able to play the fourth quarter, just imagine his stats if he played the finality of those games. That's the one thing that I was concerned about. But he never was given that opportunity. They brought Jalen Hurts to come in and kind of close the door on these guys. And I think that's probably what offended Jalen Hurts, is that they're using me as the victory cigar when I won a national championship off of my own merit as well. So I understand where he's coming from, but it's like, just finish there. I mean, you're going to go somewhere with your last year eligibility and finish there, potentially try to get a national championship there. If not, then who's to say that you do get into the NFL? Because the reason why Tua ended up getting that spot was because of your play being questionable in that latter part of that Georgia game where, you know, I thought Alabama was going to lose that game last year. And enter Tua, and there goes the storm of the wild Samoan, you know what I mean? So that's how it goes down. Okay, so we have a little under 10 minutes in this show, and I have an interesting question that I want to close out with. I want to see how you feel about this. Now, I want to say about a week or two ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, LeBron comes out with a statement and says he's the greatest of all time after he won that NBA championship up against the 73-9 Golden State Warriors, right? And I gave it some thought, right? And I'm like, okay, when the game was going down, I was saying if the Cavs beat the Warriors, this makes LeBron legendary. I'm not going to lie. Everybody that was around me heard me say that. In which I did not give him the stamp of calling him the greatest of all time, right? Then I had to think about what LeBron said, that him winning that series made him the greatest of all time. He won a championship. I respect that. He beat one of the best regular season teams that we've ever seen. Yeah, I respect that. But your winning to losing percentage, especially when it's closing time, is in favor of the losing side, right? That's one. Two, you keep comparing yourself to Michael Jordan, right? What about the other people that have been more successful in their careers in front of you? I give Tim Duncan a leg up. I give Kobe Bryant a leg up. I give Magic Johnson a leg up. Like, there's a lot of players that I would look to that have done what LeBron has. It. LeBron dominated the Eastern Conference and got 8 championships out of 9 years. He got 3 championships out of 9 years. Like okay. So it's like 1 every 3, which I give you credit for. But you're already giving yourself the leg up over a lot of the legends that have done more. Or Kareem. You could even add Kareem to this. You could add Bill Walton to this. I mean, I'm not Bill Walton. No, I wouldn't add Bill Russell to this. You know, like, there are a lot of names that have done more than LeBron, right? I.e., a lot of people try to draw the comparison of Jordan to LeBron, just to draw it. And it's like, who's telling you that you're the best of all time? Is it the crew that you grew up with? Is it somebody in Ohio? Is it somebody in Los Angeles? Did you say this to Magic? Because if you want to be technical, right, listen to how crazy Magic's career was. This is how crazy Magic Johnson's career is, right, in comparison to LeBron. Magic played 11 years, right? He went to 9 finals. Like, there was 2 seasons that he did not go to the finals. Like, think about that. Like, in the 9 that he played, he won 5. So more than half of the time, Magic was bringing something back to L.A. Like, you got the leg up over Magic? Like, I don't get it. So I'll do that one. Hey, Rob, your thoughts on this situation of LeBron already throwing this out there. And I say he's in the conversation of being one of the greatest of all times, but for him to say he is the guy, your thoughts?
Well, it's pretty simple. If you're the greatest of all time, you ain't got to say it. Let your game speak for yourself. Michael's never called himself the greatest of all time. Magic's never called himself the greatest of all time. Kareem, Oscar, Dr. J. I mean, the list goes on and on. If you're the greatest of all time, your game speaks for yourself. It speaks for you. You ain't gotta say it.
Okay, well, that's all you wanted to add? There's no names that you wanted to throw in front of it? I mean, I threw Magic, I threw Kareem, I threw Tim Duncan. I mean, these guys are notably the best players at their position. Kareem probably being the best center. You got Magic probably being the best point. Tim Duncan probably being the best power forward. These guys all have, Kareem has 6, Magic has 5, Tim Duncan has 5 championships. Like, these guys have done incredible work in their careers.
Exactly. I mean, and that's the whole thing. I mean, with the whole conversation of the greatest of all time, you can throw a whole bunch of players in there. But, I mean, you got to also factor in, like, what era did they play in? Like, who did they play with? Granted, you know, LeBron hasn't had any, you know, when he was first coming in, he didn't have any teammates. Okay, he goes to Miami. He has two other superstars with him. You know, they lose the first year that he's there, but then they win the second year, you know, and win the third year. You know, he goes back to Cleveland. Granted, you know, Kyrie is still Kyrie, and, you know, Kevin Love is iffy at best, but, you know, he got Cleveland a championship. So, I mean, he did what he said he was going to do, but still, when you say the greatest of all time, you know, you got to really put into perspective, like, back in the day when Jordan, Magic, you know, when all of them were playing, the NBA was no boys allowed. You know, like, the NBA was rough and tough. Like, you going into the lane, mm-hmm. you about to get knocked on your butt, and it's not going to be called a flagrant foul. Or, you know, you go up for a shot, and you throw up some BS or whatever, and yet you whining because you thought you got fouled. I mean, I can go and look on numerous tapes. I don't remember seeing Michael flopping or whining that he got fouled. I don't remember Magic flopping around anywhere. I remember them going into the lane, dropping their shoulder if they need to, going up, getting hit, making the basket, and still going down the court and playing some defense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nowadays the NBA is and yes, I do referee. Nowadays, basketball is a soft sport. You touch a guy, oh, it's a foul. You know, back in the day, you touch him, oh, okay. I'm going to get you on the other end.
Right, go back to the next player and get him, yep.
Yeah, you know, like nowadays, it's like, you know, you got to have freedom of movement. You got to be able to, because, you know, it's all about ratings, all about money. Everybody likes to see, you know, athletes play and actually do stuff that's fantastic to see. And defense is overrated nowadays. Back in the day, defense wasn't overrated. Talking about Detroit, you go into the lane on Detroit, all four of them are collapsing on you, hitting you. Hell, you might have got a clothesline when you went in there, too. So, you know, I mean, you just got to – it's hard to say who's the true greatest of all time because, I mean, the eras are so different. This era of basketball is nothing compared to the old age basketball. You know, the old Miami Heat versus Knicks playoff series where there's always going to be a fight. Like, right. You know, two rough and tough teams actually going back and forth at each other that literally – you know, want to, you know, without doing it, want to kill each other. You know, I mean, like, that's what it was. So it really just depends on which era you're talking about, because even in this era, if Michael was playing this era, Michael still probably would be one of the greatest of all time.
Picture Mike not being hand checked. They can't touch these dudes. Picture you not being able to touch Michael Jordan.
Like Allen Iverson. Picture Allen Iverson playing this brand of basketball nowadays. Just look at the things that James Harden is getting away with. You don't think Allen Iverson can get away with some of those things too?
Not like it is nowadays. Like LeBron has a breathing foul problem. If you breathe in LeBron's area, they will call foul. Like, they'll call.
Yeah,
and he'll flop too.
Exactly.
And throw his hands back, everything. A lot of these Warriors didn't have that happen. I'm a Hoya fan, so I know. Iverson would break his tailbone, all other type of stuff, but still go out there and play. So and I'm not trying to put Iverson in the conversation of saying that he's better than LeBron because, you know, I think Iverson's heart is bigger than LeBron, but LeBron has done more. But I will save this for tomorrow. I got to save this for Royce. I want to see how Royce feels about this. I'm saving this for the kitchen tomorrow. But I had to spice up a little bit. I do need a plug and closeout as we shut it down here at the cookout, A-Rob. Give me your thoughts, closeout, shout-out as we get up out of the kitchen here at the cookout.
Well, as you know, back again, A-Rob. I'm on all social medias. You can find me on there. I believe the Colts are going to be doing something big this weekend, so pay attention come Saturday. And that's all I got tonight. You guys have a great evening.
You save that. Okay, so tomorrow you're basketball, but Saturday morning we will have the corner, so you save your prediction for that show, at least for the first two games on Saturday. Hopefully we get him back in here. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blog, the chefs. Share the link. We got Moles back in the kitchen. I got another chef back in the building, and that's who I started this all up with. So hopefully we can work him into some shows. He's traveling this weekend. I'm feeling good. I got Roger here in America. He's over here from the UK. He's actually going to that game. Like I said, he will be at the Eagles Saints game. So we'll have a Sports City Chef live at the playoffs. Who said this? What team? What team?
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
I hope they can win a game this weekend. On that note, tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Out there for their purchase. We surely appreciate it. What you about to witness is my thoughts.
Just my thoughts, man.
Right or wrong, just what I was feeling at the time.